Hi, welcome to Someone Else's Movie, the podcast where an actor, writer, director, or nebulous industry figure gives a little love to a movie they didn't make. I'm Norm Wilner, senior film writer from Now Magazine. As always, I am your host, and thank you for letting me into your ears. My guest this week is Stephanie Belding, an actor who recently finished a run as Lonnie Henderson on Global's Remedy. She's also been in a whole bunch of stuff over the course of her career, everything from Watchmen and 50-50 to Rookie Blue and Cracked. Stephanie picked Short Term 12, a 2013 drama from writer-director Destin Daniel Cretton, starring the fantastic Brie Larson as a counselor at a California facility for disturbed children whose own personal issues come to the surface when she meets a particularly troubled new arrival, played by the equally excellent Caitlin Dever. But it's not a two-hander. Larson and Dever are just part of a great ensemble cast that also features John Gallagher Jr., Keith Stanfield, Stephanie Beatriz, Rami Malek, and Melora Walters. Barely released theatrically in Canada, this is a terrific little picture, and I'm really glad we got the chance to talk about it. This is someone else's movie. A lot of the choices on the show so far have been people picking things that they love that they saw when they were kids, or movies that make them feel good now. And Short Term 12, while I love it and it's exhilarating, not that kind of movie.
Yeah.
So what made you land on that?
I had read a lot about it. It was one of those ones that kind of came out in a small release and was an indie film, but like consistent, great. This is one of those films you have to see. And then I ended up going to see it at the Carlton. And I don't know at what level of release it was in then, if it was second run or not.
It was only around for a couple of weeks, I think.
Okay, so then I caught it.
Yeah, it played Rendezvous with Madness here and then opened the following Friday.
Oh, that would have been a great festival for it. That makes total sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then I went probably alone in the middle of the day, which is when I tend to go see films. There was one other person and she left halfway through. So I don't even know why she was at the theater. Could have just been take a load off. I loved it. I thought it was, and I've rewatched it a few times. It's such a gentle, observational, non-presentational take on the world of at-risk kids and those that are involved directly with them. So for me, what is exceptional about it is it's about people desperate to be seen and known and have place because they're not safe in the places where that should be a given. And then we're following the stories of the line workers who aren't the shrinks, who aren't the ultimate power. It's all kind of the middle of the pack, finding each other and supporting each other. But no one's story overrides anyone else's. And I found it incredibly gentle and then completely gut-wrenching.
Yeah, it is, as you say, it's a really interesting ensemble piece in its construction because it has a clear lead, but she's never in charge.
Ever.
She's not even in charge of her own life, as we quickly find out that everyone has issues and nobody's, no one's issues overrules the others.
Mm-mm.
But you get to see the moments where the gears mesh, where they sort of come together in a really strange, supportive, angry, prickly sort of way.
Human. Like, it's completely non-judgmental in its unfolding of everyone's damage or story or journey. And to see, in retrospect, being able to go back and go, okay, I can see where things are being laid in, and then they'll reveal themselves 2/3 or 3/4 of the way, or like 7/8 of the way through the film. At the big denouement, I was watching it again last night, like 10 or 12 minutes left, and you're still going, is this going to pan out the way I would love it to pan out or not? And why are we getting to this kind of climax now between John Gallagher's Jr.'s character and Brie Larson's character? And I buy it. I completely buy it.
Yeah.
And the kids are amazing. Like, the casting is fantastic. But it just feels like it's been built with such a generous hand, you know, whether that was conscientious in the filming of it or in the editing of it, or that was done on the day where they said, okay, we're going to frame and shoot this way, or that was picked up in editing, I can't tell, but it's one of my faves.
Yeah, it's when I interviewed the director when it came out, he said that he was searching for emotional truth, and everybody says that.
Mm-hmm.
Every filmmaker, every actor, and I believe it for the most part, because I don't think people want to be false. I think people want to convey an experience or an emotional reality that the audience will respond to because, you know, as you were saying earlier,
yeah.
We can tell.
I think we all kind of sniff out falseness and people who are lying to us, whether or not we acknowledge that. But I know when I'm watching someone's work, and because I'm an actor, I come at it from that perspective. I'm always going to be looking for story and then for how that story is being told through the people that are telling it. Even though film is a visual medium, I'm watching the people involved in the storytelling as much as I'm taking in, you know, the medium in which it's being told. Especially when you're working with young actors who aren't, I don't know, maybe as experienced or well-versed in what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
To get this kind of performance from everyone across the board is remarkable. It's the kind of film that I keep going, you have to see it, you have to see it, you have to see it.
Yeah.
And like pimping it relentlessly.
Well, you'd have to, because it doesn't sound like anything anybody would want to see.
I mean, no, it's true, right? And
even
I remember
the name is clinical and detached. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a documentary as opposed to a drama.
And I remember selling friends on it going, look, you know, if you like The Newsroom and John Gallagher Jr.'s in it, or if you like Brie Larson, see it. Or you're liking Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Stephanie Beatrice is in it, and you're going to see her do something that she doesn't do at all in the sitcom. But also, look at it for the kids. And man, if you've ever been to Hell and Back, and who hasn't, to understand that coming of age, or kids who are lost, or broken and damaged through no fault of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And having someone advocate on their behalf. I think when Brie Larson's character, when Grace goes after Jaden's dad, she stands on top of that car with a baseball bat and like goes at it. And part of me is going, my God, how many cars did they go through? Like 8 cars, 42 windshields. And I'm exhausted watching her. But at the same point, it's thrilling and liberating and heartbreaking because it's as much for Jaden as it is for her. And then you realize you've got this kid telling this adult that you need to get this dealt with mm-hmm. and out of your system because I recognize it. So it's the like recognizing like that is so magical and yet not treacly.
Yeah, there's an alternate universe version of this movie that is insufferable.
So, yeah, so MOW.
And it wins a couple of awards.
Yeah.
But
yeah, so ABC After School Special.
Right.
Or so bright colors and heavily soundtracked, like way too many strings.
Yeah.
As opposed to, there's a lot of like dobro or kind of slide guitar, really sparsely accented. The soundtrack is magnificent in the film. And you're right, it could have gone so horribly wrong. Yeah,
special appearance by Taylor Swift.
Right?
The counselor who saves
everyone
totally. Afterwards.
Oh.
Yeah. And instead you get people who are, you know, they're TV people, they're movie people, mm-hmm. they're actors. They look a little bit better than the rest of us. Or me.
Kind of, sort of, but not really, like, too. Like, at the same point, right?
They don't necessarily take care of themselves. And that's a character point rather than the actor dressing. Like, Brie Larson mm-hmm. is not mousing herself up or dressing herself down. The character is neglecting those aspects of her life.
Absolutely.
And we can see it. Like, you can feel that.
She goes after her cuticle on her thumb. It becomes a character choice. And again, talk about conscious or unconscious behavior, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Where she just starts picking at it till it bleeds. And both her character and Jaden's character are identified as cutters. So you see the physical scars, but you also see, and again, not knowing if they were the actor's choice or if it comes about organically, and the fact that it was caught, it was shot really well to be able to hone in on a hand, to hone in on, you know, the way a chin will drop and a gaze will move across a room and land and resonate in a huge way. It was just, it's deft and yet doesn't hit you over the head.
Yeah. No, the fluidity of the presentation,
mm-hmm.
I guess, like the packaging, not just the cinematography, but the music and the sound design and the way we are allowed to hear breathing and sort of beats in moments where you maybe would cut faster. Not just to get through the scene, but to have more of an immediate impact.
Yeah.
There's a trust at work on every portion of the film, and every aspect of it, the cast, the crew, they're all working to the same point. And what you get is something that does feel organic.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, I've seen Caitlin Dever on Justified, and I've seen Brie Larson in Scott Pilgrim, and
Right. Nobody
here is a stranger to me.
Mm-hmm.
I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine had just started airing, because I definitely knew.
Yes.
I knew who this was. And was like, oh, you're not funny.
I totally clocked it. I had just gotten into Brooklyn Nine-Nine and really fallen for it and saw her and kind of did that.
You're primed, oh, right? Wow. Like you're ready for that, it.
Yeah. And how refreshing and good on you and smart choice. I'm sure Short Term came well before that, just in the land of production.
I think it played Sundance before they shot the pilot for Brooklyn.
Oh, probably,
I mean, it probably would have been in that little window.
Yeah.
But, again, it's just great casting.
Yes.
Every single role.
Mm-hmm.
Even the abusive characters are cast with people who are kind of sympathetic and human in a way that not every movie would choose to go and not every actor would choose to play.
Yeah.
So, again, Cretton is just... He shows incredible trust in his co-workers, in his colleagues, in his actors, in his group.
Yeah.
And then in us to figure it out. Because what if the audience rejects it? And, you know, there's that additional leap of faith of they're going to get what I'm going for. They're going to understand that I'm not mashing buttons down emotionally.
Yes.
I'm just telling a story and letting people discover it.
Yeah, I can't handle. I get hostile when I'm sitting and watching television or film where I feel so obviously manipulated that I just go, I like do better. We're smarter. We know more now. We're inundated with material. We're inundated with form and format. That if I can see it coming, there has to be a reason I'm seeing this coming. Oh, no, there's no reason. You're just lazy.
Yeah.
Or someone greenlit this that really had no business getting it to this point. It's rare to come across, and it isn't mumblecore, too. It's a lovely, small, intimate, but profound piece.
Mm-hmm.
That an under, I think it's under 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Like it's not long.
82, I think.
Yeah.
Or
encapsulates this massive journey.
I think this says 94, but I don't believe that.
Yeah, that's with full credits, I'm sure,
just,
right?
Yeah. I'm just looking at it.
Yeah.
The packaging
so
here. By the way, if you are listening and haven't seen Short Term 12, go see it. There's something wrong with you.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
And it's excellent.
Yeah.
It's, this is the standard, you know, we're going to go into spoilers, so pause this and then come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
Do
yourself a favor for 90 minutes.
It's really, really good. I watched it, I think I might have watched it in a hotel room.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't terrible, it was a good Vimeo link, but I was watching it in isolation. I wasn't even home, I wasn't in a movie theater. It's just, that's how it was presented to me in advance of the interview.
Yeah.
Which is a whole different problem that critics are dealing with now, where, you know, seeing a film in a theater is actually a rarity if it's not a Marvel production.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I have friends who build and create stuff and then get so frustrated when that's how it gets presented, because they've EQ'd it for a theater, they've done all of the color correcting for a theater, they've built it to be a cinematic experience, and people are looking at it on their iPhones and they're going, but you don't know my film, you haven't seen my work.
No kidding. And I understand the appeal of secure streaming links.
Yes.
For piracy. I mean, if you're HBO and you have the gamey throwy thing, I totally understand that you want to protect your investment and not let things get out. But at the same time, I have spoken to filmmakers and they've been horrified that I watched their movie buffer. Even like for 2 minutes, it's like, yeah, great. I want to watch this film as best I can, and you are creating a condition where I get to watch it as though I'd pirated a cam copy.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not helping.
Yeah, but with this, I mean, I had a good connection and it played fine. And after about 3 minutes, I didn't matter.
Yeah.
Which is the Netflix endorsement, is you can watch this on a computer if you must.
Oh, the opening is so great. It's John Gallagher Jr.'s story about shitting his pants with the kid and the runners. I mean, there's this great recurring theme of the little redheaded, the little ginger Sammy, who keeps
escaping.
Yeah,
or trying to.
It's just beautiful. And it's Keith Stanfield, isn't it? Yeah, Stanfield, who plays Marcus, who Destin Cretton, the director, did all of the writing of the rap that you hear, but then he let Keith run with it and punch it up to make it better and to make it flow more and be more of Marcus's character. And it's heartbreaking and fantastic. The scene where he wants desperately to shave his head and they shave his head and he just wants to know if there are any marks or cuts or scrapes because he was repeatedly beaten by his mom as a kid. And again, in the wrong hands. Oh my God, this sounds like a melodramatic piece of Drek. But it, I was a weepy mess rewatching it yesterday.
I can see that. It's incredibly powerful. I mean, it's powerful because it sneaks up on you.
Yeah.
It gets, like, the level of intimacy at work in the film, mm-hmm. between individual characters, between the actors as a result of that, it transfers. It comes out, and it's that thing where you plant a seed of character, and then an hour later when someone does something, and Linklater
does
it.
You're invested.
Yeah, and but you instantly know where it comes from. Not just why, but how.
Were you going to bring in Boyhood?
I was going to say. Yeah, the thing totally. Where when Mason turns down a beer at the end of the movie, we know why.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really matter to anybody else.
No.
But he knows and we know. And that connects us even further. And the other thing you did say, like, there'd be these huge swelling moments, but he's not interested in it, so the movie isn't.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't have a savior angle.
Like, yeah.
She, Brie Larson, is not helping everyone overcome personal trauma.
No.
In that moment forever. She maybe nudges two people towards better lives. And that's the extent of it, because, and I believe this, in a situation like that, that's probably all you can do.
Yeah.
You're not going to, you know, Goodwill Hunting these people out of years of mm-hmm. abuse and repressed memories and misery and pain and physical scars. That's not how this works. You know, like, the idea of the instant psychological breakthrough is the invention of drama, and it works great in some people's hands, but this movie is a lot more clear-eyed about how people live and how people recover.
And I think that's why it resonates, I think, on a bigger scale, because of the detailed specificity of it. You're getting into individual case studies and connecting to the characters and understanding that within each of them, they're completely human and totally flawed, and there is no easy fix, and no one's a winner, mm-hmm. and no one's a complete write-off, and that just by setting it in the facility where you do have to technically age out, you are only in for a short term, and people are going to come and go. But it keeps happening.
Yeah.
The cycle keeps happening. These facilities never close. They don't go away. In fact, they could probably use a billion more of them with more expansive capacities to actually do outreach. But it's remarkable to find myself as a viewer so completely invested in each individual story and then not be desperate for a happy ending.
Yeah.
But just to be grateful to have been on the journey with them.
Yeah. It doesn't even give you that much in the way of closure.
For
one character gets mm-hmm. some, but that's about it. And there's a, I was trying to come up with the right metaphor for it earlier. It's like, well, it's not exactly like reading a book. It's not exactly like watching it, like dropping in on an episode of a television series, because there's too much.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt to me like getting on the subway train and getting off again.
Yeah.
There's just this
that's
slide
good.
Through these people's lives.
Yeah.
And then you leave, or the movie leaves, more or less where it started, but in a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, emotionally, the way that final escape moment plays, I'm not even worried about spoilers, I'm just trying to figure out how to articulate it, but it's, you know, again, it opens as it ends, with characters chasing someone as they try to get
but
away.
But we understand what it means now
in a
bigger way, and the fact that it's not the be-all and the end-all. That we're not Nate on his first day anymore.
Yeah.
We've kind of been indoctrinated along with Nate, and it's smart to have him in there as the newbie and kind of use him as a template for what to do and what not to do as we're experiencing the world with them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not too, there's not too many in-jokes, and there's not too many outsider kind of judgments coming at us on either level.
Yeah.
But the fact that they shoot top and tail and then tail it in slow-mo with this great, glorious...
Yeah, it feels like an epiphany.
Yeah.
But it isn't.
No.
I mean, it's just that... It's that moment where, again, a less confident director, or maybe a director who just worked more and was more jaded about the experience of communicating with audiences,
mm-hmm.
might have just made it feel like... You get the sense that things are going to be okay.
Yeah.
But there's no guarantee. And this might just be the one good day. Like, there's no sense of...
Yeah.
There's a sense of hope... but there's a clarity to everything that we see that wasn't there before, because we're oriented. Like, we now know where we fit in the story, exactly. And it's time for us to go.
Yeah.
And that's such a smart, intuitive... I don't know how he ended on... Like, it's a perfect device. Of course, That's why you end on it. But I don't know why he chose it or how he even figured out that he could get away with it. Because when you're conceiving it, it's like, oh, well, it's just people running. But then the way it's shot and the way it's presented to
us... But he knows the world, right? Yeah. Having worked in a facility, and especially as a... Like, right out of school,
this was his first... Yeah, his first summer job after high school, he said.
So... Again, imprinting and how that affects you. But when you know something inherently and you understand the inner workings of it in a way that other people don't, because they're always going to be outsiders. And I think that's what they use Brie Larson's character when she goes to her superior, who says, look, I've been doing this longer than you've been alive. Yeah. I'd love to be able to kill all of the parents who are responsible for damaging these kids. But my job is to oversee this and to deal with the politicking and the logistics of admin. It's nice to be able to see her perspective in it and go, okay, I relate to that.
Yeah.
Because
he's not unreasonable either.
No.
Like, that's the worst part. It's not apathy.
No.
Like, it's an awareness of his own inability to fix that thing.
And it's the reality of being in an admin position in that kind of facility. But we're going to go on the journey through her perspective. And I think he writes, and I'm just positing here, from that knowledge of, okay, this was my experience in it, and I talked to a lot of people, and I'm building based on real experiences, but we're not going for based on a true story.
Yeah.
It comes from a place of knowledge.
Yeah, and honesty is better than nonfiction sometimes.
Absolutely.
Like, he finds a greater...
Yeah.
Truth, a greater reality, maybe not a greater reality since it's all invented, but mm-hmm. there is a sense of authenticity in every frame. It's like, just, I know the posters on the wall are right. I don't know how I know that.
Yeah.
But by the end of the film, I had no doubt that this is exactly right. And that, like, translating that is hard.
Yeah.
Because you can't do it alone. And, you know, unless you take Polaroids and video of every office you've ever worked in, you have to trust people to create that.
Well, it's why you have medical experts on hospital shows. It's why you have cops and detectives talk to, you know, procedural writers. And it's why, just because you want inner machinations and workings and tips and tricks and, you know, why you're going to, if someone's got to be a chef, they're going to bring in someone to teach them knife skills just so we buy it.
Sure, yeah.
I don't want to feel uncomfortable whenever I'm watching someone going, oh, they have no idea what they're doing and they're doing it really badly. Get a musician to actually play on screen and I'm okay with that. But give someone an instrument or ask someone to smoke who doesn't smoke, then I'm completely taken out of the world that you're desperately trying to convince me is happening in front of me.
Yeah.
And I think he does a brilliant job of creating the world and not judging it. That is what I keep going back to. There's no judgment. It's a very, I'm just going to put this here and I'm going to leave this here and we're going to just open up the box and this is the world within where this story lives and these people come from.
Yeah, you're right. There's no judgment. And even the relationship issues that Larson and Gallagher are going through.
Yeah.
Where there's that incredible contradiction of wanting to have a child and not wanting to be touched.
Yes.
And
him knowing and him the knowing. Patience and the, I mean, a bit frustrating for me wanting to throttle both of them at either times. But then, intelligently, we start to see his story and his family and being one of this massive foster family of goodness and craziness and all the pieces fit together without going, look, did you see what we did here? We're so clever. This is why he speaks Spanish and this is who this person is. And it's just delicate. And I appreciate that because, you know, I'm not an idiot. I can figure stuff out if I see it. And there's room for my own interpretation. Like, we could find totally different hooks into our way into this film, different things that would compel us, where you're totally fixated on Jaden and I'm totally fixated on Marcus, but we're going to still come at it with a big world attached to it.
Yeah.
He's created a very, very detailed, large world in a very small film. Yeah. And that's amazing.
It really is. It's the pocket universe theory.
Yeah.
Right? Where you're immersed and you can leave if you want to, mm-hmm. but maybe stick around and see why you're here.
Like, I'd go back. Like, if I'm so curious and invested in those people in that world that, you know, if another 3 hours of cut footage came up, I'd watch it.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
You know?
Mean, you could almost see an episodic mm-hmm. coming out of this where the treatment is, you follow a different intake or you follow a different, I guess it's St. Elsewhere as the model.
Yeah.
Or even something like Remedy where it's not a disease of the week, it's an issue.
Or Parenthood.
Oh, that's
in terms
true.
Of scope, right?
Yeah.
Like Parenthood is massive for that.
And you have the range.
Yeah.
To move around.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. That's one of my favorites. I don't know how to say it. Is it Kadams? Kateems?
I think it's Kadams.
Kadams.
I'm probably wrong.
Clear eyes, full hearts. It's never going to leave me.
Yeah. I was actually talking to Mae Whitman when The Duff came out, and the I think the last episode had just aired.
Right.
And they'd shot it a few weeks earlier. Obviously, it had been done mm-hmm. for a while, but
yeah,
she said it's all
online.
Coming up again. Like, it's just still reverberating. And every now and then, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm not on that show anymore.
Oh.
Right? Like, it's not that the Bravermans are gone. They're just not here.
No.
It's a weird distance thing that isn't distant because, you know, thanks to Netflix and television and all that, they're never going to go away. Nothing's gone.
But they journeyed for so long, and there was a lot of journeying going on. There was a lot happening
mm-hmm.
that there's a comfort and a curiosity in tuning in and going, I wanted to see where the story keeps going.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same with Short Term 12 going, I'm really curious to see. Yeah. What about me?
The show's over, but I need closure on that anecdote. There's a handful of shows where that, you know, it either, and it happens in films too, you can overstay your welcome.
Yes.
Or you just run out of ideas,
mm-hmm.
or you just take a wrong turn, which happens. You know it when it happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, Parenthood and Friday Night Lights, well, Friday Night Lights had the murder thing.
Yeah, that was just
that. It's just where you're sitting there going, oh no, this isn't what happens.
Who ordered what for lunch? Because what was going on in the room?
Yeah.
Like, at what point was that a good idea?
That is a network note that went terribly wrong.
Right?
It's one of those things where it's like, well, can we have a little more dramatic conflict? Can there be something at stake? It's like, yeah, we can kill a guy.
Yeah.
Would you like that? Yes, we would. And then you're married to it.
Be a fly on the wall. And then we're just going to forget about that and move on to season 3.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I mean, I like that there's a thing in Daredevil.
I haven't seen that yet on Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay.
I will not spoil it, but there's a thing where the entire show is about morality and whether our hero is willing to take a life. Because, you know, it's the standard Marvel superhero thing. It's like, well, like, it's weird. In movies, Captain America mows down Nazis by the hundreds in the first movie and kills a few people in Winter Soldier. But you put them on television, you put them in your homes, and they can't kill people. Unless they're Batman. Batman can't kill people in the movies either. But there's this whole weird, you know, like, I can let you die.
Right.
But I won't kill you. I am not
accountable.
Yeah. This isn't my choice.
Yeah.
Or direct intervention. And there's a thing in Daredevil where someone kills somebody, and it's a clear act of self-defense, and it's entirely motivated, and it never comes back. And you're just like, oh, they're going to go there. They're actually going to let moral ambiguity in a tiny bit to this story, to this arc. And I'm not going to say who it is. And I'm not going to talk about it at all. By the time this comes out, everyone will binge watch the whole thing anyway. But it's a really smart piece of storytelling in the middle of this big, serious, black and white
mm-hmm.
superhero movie where you are good or you are evil. And they're like, oh, no, here's a good person who does a bad
thing
in the
moment. We're all so gray. As I get older, I mean, in some ways, I think some things have gotten very white and very black, and then everything else has gotten very gray.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that kind of ambiguity, and I like not having the kind of tidy, tight, as much as I'm a fan of episodic and procedural and disease of the week, and big old lush films that tie everything up nicely in a bow every now and then. I really appreciate the complications. I really, in reading your interview with Cretton, and he mentioned Fruitvale Station, which again was one of my all-time faves of 2 years ago now?
Yeah, it would be 2013.
I mean, I know it was based on true accounts, but again, the complications.
Yeah.
And difficult people in difficult situations doing difficult things.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is way more interesting.
I think that's I mean, it's, well, I always fall back on this quote from Roger Ebert, is that cinema is an empathy machine. It puts you in someone else's life and you get to understand them. But there is a manner of storytelling that insists on empathy and makes you live someone as though they were you, and make and choose their decisions. Once you realize, why he's worried about shaving his head because they might be scarce, once you understand where that comes from, once you understand who people are, it's a lot harder to classify them as monsters or beasts or
something. And it's individual, right? It's person to person. So that's why the medium is so powerful, that you can have that individual experience, and it takes away that huge feeling of other and autre, that they're the people that you don't know, all of a sudden you know.
Yeah.
And they become immediate and in your lives in ways that you then can transfer onto other people that you don't know. I mean, it just, ideally, it's about integration. And I know we always talk about it as actors going, that's my job, is to live the lives so you guys get to live vicariously through us, and to present you with the hopes, dreams, failures, disasters that you can experience through us while you sit in the dark room watching us go through all that on screen. And those are the journeys. I think it's a safe way to experience hell and the best of people. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, again, when it does, you know. Like, you can feel it and you respond to it on a pure, like, it's not an intellectual kind of response. It's an absolute connection with the, with these two-dimensional flickering things, which just, you know.
And it translates culture and language, too. Like, the lunchbox was one of my faves of the last 2 years. I got to work in India shooting a documentary years ago now, and that was my first introduction to it. But I was just working with Anushri Roy. We were doing Remedy and stuff together, and she's a wonderful playwright as well, and spends a lot of time still in India, as well as here. But we were talking about the film, and for me, I had just seen, I don't know if it was Brothel 9 or another play that she had done, but looking at the relationships between my auntie upstairs and the female lead, and her relationship to her husband, and the relationship to, oh, I fell in love with Irfan Khan, though, from something else. Oh, well, Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, he was in everything.
Yeah, and he's fantastic. But even though, I mean, I'm a, you know, white Irish Anglo-Quebecer living in Toronto, understanding their passion and their longing and the frustration, and the universal becomes really intimate and really personal. And I think that's what film and novels too, but film and TV do really well. I think the more detailed and the more specific you are, the more universal it gets.
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's, again, it's authenticity. It's the ring. It's the ring of truth.
Yeah.
You believe it. Novels do it, television does it, but I think there's something about the window of time. It's a sensitive movie about really horrible things that never play as horrible because it's all in the past. Like, it's already, it's already been
processed.
Yeah, that's
true, too.
It's pre-digested trauma.
When it does get very present in physical acts of violence or in the threat of physical violence, it only serves to reference and make the past stuff resonate even more.
Like, it's history coming out.
Yeah.
It's people screaming towards catharsis.
Yeah.
But they don't know what catharsis should be.
Yeah.
It trusts us to understand these aren't bad people. They're just, I mean, some of them are.
but even still, no one's painted right or left, black and white. There's a lot of gray area, but there's also the humanity of the imperfect. Broken people create broken people, and it's also interesting to watch other broken people help those that are suffering towards wholeness. And I think that's what Brie Larson's character's whole journey is in hooking onto Jaden and trying to get her to a place of stability and understanding that there's support and that this doesn't have to continue and she can get beyond it. Unconsciously, it's her journeying towards the same end result. It does feel unconscious. Never at once do I feel that it was written or directed or played to be... It's not didactic, you know? There's no finger wagging. There's no... I'm telling you what's going on because I know better.
Right. Yeah, that's true. This is a movie that doesn't... By not guaranteeing a happy ending or a happy beginning, it doesn't say... there's no music cue at the very beginning that tells you that this is going to be an uplifting film.
Right.
There are many of those. And this is going to be different. And you're going to have to invest in characters who might not make it.
And the palette is different. It's shot differently. It's colored differently. Mm-hmm. And it's framed really specifically. There's a ton. It's close up, maybe some mediums, maybe some doubles. Only when it pulls back into a wide shot, it's after everyone has been established.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, we're getting a feel for the big picture here. Because if we stay in too tight, too long, it might get a bit overwhelming. So let's just pull back. And then we'll go back into delicate, to a hand on a knee, to everyone sketching and comparing notebooks. And it's really intelligently built. It's the attention to detail is really remarkable because it doesn't feel ham-fisted.
Yeah, it's considered.
Oh, that's a good word for it, sure.
Yeah, it's the work of someone who, it's first feature syndrome, right? You may only get this one shot. You're going to put everything you have into it. But he's applied that energy to detail in a really, really affecting way.
Coming on, I didn't see the short, but knowing that he had that under his belt to then go, okay, this is my template. And then how do I expand upon this? And you said you've seen the short?
Yeah, he's built out from it.
But
it's essentially... The values are the same, the message, the mission is the same in both.
I could have, like I said earlier, seen another 3 hours just because I was really invested in the world. And yet it doesn't feel like a short film when I'm watching it, and it is relatively short.
Mm-hmm. No, you just want to be there. I was going to say there's no risk. There's no risk with any movie. You can always turn it off, walk away. You're the same person, whatever. But there is a sense that it's an investment worth making while it's happening. And, you know, having watched it subsequently more than once, it still delivers that because now I can look for things at the beginning and look for cues in the acting and even in the and camera angles, as you say. They're really thoughtfully laid out.
Yeah.
And that tells me that the film knows what it's doing.
Yes.
The filmmaker has...
And then I relax.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, second viewings are of a film where you're sort of on tenterhooks like that emotionally are always more rewarding just because you're not... My problem with a movie that I'm really into on that level is that I'm terrified it's going to fuck up in the last third.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if you blow the final act, you're going to kill me.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
It's smart. Not clever. Smart. Because it feels... it's a concerted effort, but it's not a manipulative choice.
Yeah.
And when I feel safe and secure in knowing that it's not going to fall apart on me, I sit back and unconsciously get farther into the experience.
Oh yeah, sure. Because you're not protecting yourself.
No, from it just going sideways and just becoming an absolute shit show, which there's too much of as well.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah. And it's disappointing.
Yeah. Sometimes it's nice when they get out of the way in the first 5 minutes, where it's just oh, okay, there's nothing here. I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah.
I don't have to invest any of myself. It's almost heartening to see something hit like this because then you can take, you know, comfort in the fact that people still can pull something like this or wrestle something like this into a workable package.
Yeah.
And there's nothing more cynical than referring to a movie as a package, but ultimately it's a collection of talents and choices.
Oh, everyone has to be on the same page.
Yeah.
You know, one sprocket goes out and the entire framing gets lopsided. Everyone has to be telling the same story and going for the same end result. It's collaborative by nature.
Yeah.
The work always is. And if you don't have everyone aiming for the same thing, even if they're doing it in their own disparate ways, everyone has to be trying to go for the same final product.
Yeah. Well, you need to have an image in mind. Somebody mm-hmm. once described it to me as a bunch of people all pulling a rope with exactly the same tensile strength mm-hmm. in the same direction. And it's hard to coordinate.
Yeah.
And so you have to trust everybody. And what a movie like this proves to me is that if you trust people, they'll trust you back.
Yeah.
And they'll give you everything.
Yeah.
Because this is just, I mean, and this is brings me to the other key question for you is, you know, like, is there anything that you've taken from the film or used yourself since seeing it? Is there something or something that you would want to be able to do given the opportunity?
Yeah, I love this style of filmmaking. It's my favorite compelling form. I love a small, intimate, story-driven, character-driven, emotional journey that isn't about proving a point.
Right.
I loved Boyhood. I could have sat through another 12 hours. All it seems that my single 30-something male friends didn't.
I don't get it. I thought it was perfect.
I mean, I did too, but I had a lot of male friends in Facebook chatterland go, yeah, well, what is up with the whole Ethan? And I went, okay, so that's on you. And then my response is on me. Mm-hmm. But as a female who isn't in her 30s anymore going, I totally get the journey. And I found being able to be welcomed into that and sit in that and not be told how to feel or how to think or what is necessarily going to happen. I just went along for the ride. So I like being able to go along for the ride because it's very inviting. I'm in the middle of reading The Art of Asking right now by Amanda Palmer.
Oh, of course.
Oh, it's so good. But it really is about presenting, this is my stuff, and we're just going to give it to you here. And people can either take the stuff as they need it, or pass on the stuff, or integrate and use your stuff with their stuff, and then you make something together. And you ask for what you need, you take what you need. And it's a real sharing mentality. And a film like this, to me, it's, again, I'm just going to leave this here. It's that sense of we've made this great little gem and it should be seen and shared. So we're just going to leave this here. We're not going to tell you what to think or feel or where it should take you. But we know it's going to resonate. Because if it doesn't, then, well, you're not of this earth. I don't, you know, and I think it would resonate in different languages. I think it would resonate in different cultures. Because the relationships are universal in how everyone connects to each other.
Yeah. And it's, again, you know, it sends you out on a high, even if the characters may not get one. Like, you get to feel that you've left at the right point.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reservation in my mind, because you can tell people this is a feel-good movie because you kind of do feel good at the end, but it's so completely subverts that, it earns it in a way that so many other films don't really worry about.
Yeah.
And it's a gauntlet that you run, and then at the end you get to bust through the tape, even if the movie itself keeps going without you. It's just such a great triumphant way out of that story where you could very easily just be lost in maybe not darkness, but definitely in misery. And I can't wait to see what
I'm hoping that, like, the powers that be and the forces that he surrounded himself with, the other creatives, whatever his gang is and his tribe is, are brewing up some fun, interesting, compelling stuff.
Yeah. I don't think he's done by any means. I'm sure he'll...
No, I can't imagine. And I think it's been a good experience in the sense that he created a fantastic film that was... I mean, it wasn't a blockbuster success, but it's been critically really well received.
Yeah,
like, why wouldn't you want to keep moving forward?
Yeah. I don't know anyone who didn't like it.
No, that's a good one too. Yeah,
didn't see it, but mm-hmm. that's different. The reception has been uniformly strong, as far as I know.
I've turned a bunch of people onto it, and universally, they've turned around after watching it, going, "Oh my god, it's so great! It's so great!" And I've been chatting a lot about it recently because I'm working on a new sitcom for a new comedy called Clarity, which is set in a rehab center, and I referenced this off the top. I said, you have to see this. It's the same, but not the same on any level. But it's those dynamics of once you're in any kind of facility or treatment center or any kind of gang, any kind of work environment where everyone is fully realized, but on their own planet, doing their own thing, and how everyone kind of floats and rotates and bangs into each other, and without hitting people with a bat upside the head.
Yeah.
Just the car windows.
Yeah, and they deserve it.
The car windows. Oh my God. I was exhausted. Like 15, 20 swings. She just goes until it finally gives way.
And she's little.
She's like pocket sized. Because there's a shot of her with Jaden at one point coming down the hallway. And I went, oh, we've got a 15 year old and we have a fully grown adult and they're the exact same. And you go, yeah, they're tiny.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not. So I clock people that are tiny. And
but the frailty too is part of it. Like you have to judge her as not being willing to swing the bat, you know, or that it's just purely defensive, and then no, there's rage,
like so much rage.
Yeah.
It was great.
We knew she wasn't going to get an Oscar nomination. I mean, there was just no chance that the film was going to register. Yeah. But we tried so hard to make people know.
Did anything come about it for like Independent Spirit?
Grand Jury Prize, South by Southwest. I think it was nominated for a number of them, but I believe it.
And people talked about her and her performance for sure.
Oh yeah,
simply because she's remarkable in it.
It is fantastic. I mean, you think about. I think about the other things I've seen her in, and she's always good.
Yeah, she's always compelling and watchable. Yeah. And
she turned up in Community for a couple of episodes.
Oh,
she's,
awesome.
Yeah, opposite Danny Pudi, and she is just tremendously talented. Comedy, too, which, I mean,
so
I know she's
easy.
In Scott Pilgrim, but you just don't think of her as a comic actor.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just crushes it in the roles where she's given the opportunity.
Well, and I think that comes with everyone's on the same page, right? You get good work from people when we feel safe and confident and well taken care of.
Yeah.
I know when I know I'm in good hands, then I just don't give a shit, right? There's great confidence and you kind of dial it up to 11 and play because you know everyone else has your back.
Yeah. But that's where the stuff comes from. That's where the good stuff comes from.
Always.
The good footage, the good...
Always.
It's the last take of the day or the first take of the day before people said, oh, tone it down or turn it up.
Yeah.
Or the last take when it's just like, you know what? We're tired. We're doing whatever the hell we want. I mean, I've been on enough sets to see that. And which is to say three. But it's
they're all the same.
But it's a truism. It actually does happen every time. And according to this, Best Editing was the only prize it won at the Spirit.
Oh, yeah. Well, Larson that's good, nominated. Though, because that's something I really noticed in, like, the fourth rewatching of it, was how beautifully it was articulated. It was totally articulated through the editing. And not in a way where you're like, oh, that's good editing. But to stand back after repeated viewings and go, oh, I love that shot. And what do I know from shots, right? Like, I'm not a DOP. I'm not someone who thinks about that specifically unless I need to. Tell me a story. You can tell it visually without dialogue. Fine.
Sure.
Or you can park and bark and do, like, My Dinner with Andre. Fine. Or you can sing it. Or you can run it. Or you can... The medium is wide open, but tell me a story. I think we as beings, as interconnected communal beings, love story and need to be in relation with it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we're alone in the middle of an island.
Watching Transformers movies.
Right? Oh.
There's got to be a better way.
Holy smokes, I hope so. I think I've only seen the first one. I think life's too short.
That's enough.
Well, yeah.
Movies certainly aren't there. Like two into the last one is two. The last one is 1 minute shorter than Boyhood. Or 1 minute longer. I can't remember which. It felt three times as long.
And you can imagine there's like 8 more hours of footage that they didn't squeeze in there.
God. I don't know that that's true. I think that they just blow it out by shoving everything into the box that
I
they can.
I find that stuff that's so big and so loud and so obnoxious. Borderline seizure. Mm. And I'm not prone to seizures, but, you know. And there's so many other choices, like on any given day. There's seven other theaters in the same theater that I can go see something else in.
Oh, and you're right to do so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and you go to the Carlton and you see Short Term 12 instead.
So great.
And order is restored.
Yeah. And then I watch it again and again and again.
And there we are. My copious thanks to this week's guest, Stephanie Belding, who basically did this episode for Mango. It's a long story. You can find her on Twitter and ask her about it if you want to. She's at Steph Belding. And she's very nice. And go watch Short Term 12. It's streaming on Netflix. It's also available in an excellent special edition Blu-ray and DVD, where you'll find Destin Cretton's original short, as well as a few other supplements you might appreciate. You can find me online at Norm Wilner on Twitter, elsewhere on the internet at nowtoronto.com. Oh, you can also find this podcast at Semcast, S-E-M-Cast, or on the interwebs at someoneelsesmovie.com. I hope you're enjoying the show now that I kind of understand what I'm doing. And if you do like it, let me know. Leave a review on iTunes, maybe, or tweet back at me. With enough feedback, I will make it even better next time. Thanks for listening.
I'm afraid you're just too darn loud.